everyone, and welcome to today's Open Systems Publishing eCast. My name is Joe Pavlot. I'm the editorial director of Compact PCI, Advanced TCA Systems Magazine, and also the president of PCMIG, and I'll be moderating the event today. The topic today is using advanced TCA for low latency control loop applications. We all tend to think of ATCA as a telco-centric platform for telecom applications, but in fact it's being used in a wide variety of applications. And today our speaker is going to talk about using ATCA to make cost-effective, scalable systems that can be used for low-latency control loop applications in industrial equipment. Our speaker today is Ian Shearer, who's a senior account manager with Mercury Computer Systems. Ian's a double E and has an extensive knowledge of the digital signal processing world, having done a lot of design work in the imaging and audio processing and X-ray scanning system technologies. And he's going to talk today about using ATCA for low-latency control loop applications. A bit of housekeeping, today there's a little box on the lower left of your presentation screen where you can post a question. Anytime during the presentation, you can type a question in there. It'll show up on our screens, and at the end of Ian's presentation, we'll be doing a Q&A, and hopefully we'll be able to have time to get through all the questions. Also, partway through the presentation is a poll question, and that's something that will pop up on your screen, a question that we'd like you to answer. So if you could just take a second when that poll question pops up and answer it, that would be of great help. So without further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Ian Shearer and to talk about ATCA and low-latency control loop applications. Ian?
Thanks very much, Joe. As Joe says, I'm with Mercury Computer Systems. I've been with them about 10 years. When I was putting this presentation together, I realized that it's my first work in control systems was a ground tracking radar with adaptive filters, and things have changed a fair amount since then, since that was about 20 years ago, back in the days when I was designing this type of equipment rather than selling it. But for the last 10 years, I've been working with Mercury Computer Systems on various multiprocessing systems, and in the last few years, specifically with ATCA. Right, just give you a brief overview of who Mercury is, for those of you who don't know. Mercury's been working in multi-computing for about 25 years now. We really have a broad range of markets that we support, and those are shown on this slide. Our strength is applying technology across those markets and learning from one market to take it on to another. So we've worked with the energy, gas and oil exploration, embedded computing, semiconductor equipment, communications, defense, and the life sciences as well, particularly in medical imaging applications. We support a range of platforms, ATCA, VME and its derivatives, and various custom platforms as well. And support anything from a couple of processors up to 1,000 processors working on the same application. So you can see that there's a broad range covered there. And what we're looking at today really shows that the feed across between those markets, where we're taking a platform that is really designed and has its root in the communication space, but we're finding applies very nicely in the industrial and semiconductor markets. So if we have a look at the presentation structure today, I've looking at the people who have registered for this, I realize that we've got quite a diverse audience. So some of you will understand the application space well. Some of you will know something of Rapid I.O. or ATCA, and others of you will know less. So what we're going to do is provide a little overview at the start of each of these sections, but we're not going to be trying to treat this as a sort of teaching session for Rapid I.O. or ATCA. We can point you to places where you can get more detailed information if you need that, but really we're just looking at a quick overview of what these technologies are, and then really focusing on how those apply to this particular application. And the application, as Joe said, is really of interest because it's not a standard application for ATCA. It's not where most people think of as this technology sitting. And yet it does fit very well, as we've discovered. So if we have a quick look at an overview of the application space, most people, if they think about control loops, they think of something fairly simple, like a three-term controller, a PID controller, where you are driving an actuator based on proportional integral derivative of a displacement. So you've got a fairly simple controller for controlling the position of some equipment, and that sort of application will typically fit on a fraction of a single processor. So that at the bottom end of this application space, you have something that you can put onto a microcontroller. And typical applications there may be stepper motors, industrial conveyors, etc. You can go up to something more complex, like a jet engine or a hardware-in-the-loop simulator, and of course your application grows, and so your processing needs grow. And if you move from that up to really the top end of the market, or the application space, where you're looking at things like semiconductor, microlithography, nanometer scale or micrometer scale laser applications, then in that space you get to a point where you simply cannot fit this with a single processor. You have to deal with multiple processors and spread your application across those. The issues that drive the number of processors that you're using are the precision of your placement, the speed of movement, and really the complexity of the algorithms that you're applying, or the complexity of the system that you're fitting in. If the controller sits in a complex environment, then you also need a lot of interaction with other subsystems around it. And again, if you are looking at something that has a, particularly in the semiconductor space, then you'll very often have to look at things like temperature, humidity, and correct your algorithms for those environmental things. Examples of the more complex area would be things like wafer handling subsystems, where you've got a lot of interaction with other subsystems within the equipment, and your behavior depends on what those other subsystems are doing. So what you're looking at is a complex multiprocessor application with a lot of interaction with other subsystems and typically very tight time constraints that you have to work to. So looking at the application requirements in a little more detail, we'll come back in a moment to deterministic latency, because that is the most critical driver of this application. And we'll look at the others and then come back to the latency and look at that in a little bit more detail. The support for proprietary I.O. is driven by the fact that in a control application, what you're doing is interacting with a lot of external equipment, actuators, sensors, other subsystems. And generally speaking, you have to work with some of this equipment that already exists. So altering everything at once is generally not an option. And so what you need to do is to support existing or proprietary interfaces. When you're working in one of these complex systems, if you imagine an industrial application, of course, you have different configurations depending on where that application is placed. And the same is true through semiconductor equipment, etc., where that flexibility is needed to support these different configurations. So what you will generally want is a configurable system in terms of the number of IOs that it supports, the number of processors, potentially the processor types. You may have a range of performance levels that you want to achieve, and of course you want the scalability in your system and the modularity that will support that. Cost metrics are important in just about any application space these days, so you want cost metrics that are effective, cost-effective for the performance that you achieve with your solution. And for any application space, particularly for OEMs, it's important that the hardware roadmap has a path forward. A point solution generally just pushes off problems into the future. So as well as having a good solution for today, you want to know that you're going to have a good solution tomorrow and moving forward. So you need a technology roadmap, and you need an architecture that supports that roadmap. All right, so I said that we would go back to look at the latency in a little more detail. And this is the really the issue that differentiates control type applications from many other applications. If you look at most processing subsystems and the metrics that are used to describe them, or if you look at backplane technologies and fabric technologies, then most of what people will quote are throughput, bandwidth, these sorts of performance figures that are really to do with mean levels of performance and are bandwidth related rather than latency related. The control applications are somewhat different in that bandwidth is typically less of a constraint and that latency is the key driver. And I had this was brought very much to mind for me when I was working on an installation out in China, and I heard several tons of steel hit against a concrete end stop because it had missed a marker and the brakes weren't applied in time. So the consequences of not hitting your latency constraints can be quite dire. Having a fast processor within the processing subsystem is of little use if it takes too long to communicate with it. And the latency has to be measured over the entire sensor-to-actuator path. So your input, your processing delay, the inter-processor data path, and the output as well. Mean latency is not a sufficient measure of performance in this application space. Now, if you go back to the hitting the brakes too late, doing it right 95 times out of 100 is fine, but the other 5 could kill you. And that's the same is true in the machine space. It's the outriders, the peak latency that really matters. Now, what's appropriate really does vary from application to application. In many applications, you're talking in terms of milliseconds, but at the top end, you're going down to less of that, tens to hundreds of microseconds. And in this area, you really do need to focus on the interprocessor communication as a key part of the system. In the work we've done in this space in Mercury, we've done some assessments and benchmarks, and we found out that software is typically dominant in terms of even the interprocessor communication. Hardware obviously works a lot quicker than software does, and the software overhead in getting messages from processor A to processor B typically will swamp the hardware latency if you have the right communication fabric. That does depend, obviously, on making that choice, and that's something that we will come back to in a little while. And that point does lead on to the question that Joe mentioned earlier. If you're looking for a low-latency application, which is a switch fabric would you expect to use for your next low-latency application? Some of the choices of commonly available switch fabric are up there on the slide. If you want to take a little while, have a quick think about that and submit one of those as a choice. We'll just wait for a second while you do that. And then we'll look at one of those choices in a little more detail as one that we found to be applicable to some of the applications that we have studied. Okay, so RapidIO is a switch fabric that Mercury knows well, which isn't surprising since we co-developed it with what used to be Motorola and is now Freescale. It was our, I guess, third generation of fabric that Mercury was involved in, having its roots in what we knew as RACE and RACE++. As the slide shows here, as most of these things are, it's a layered standard. It's widely supported within the industry. There's a trade association behind it, so it's a public open standard, and you can see the website there, and that's where we would suggest that you go if you want any further details on the technical details of what RapidIO is, or details of where processors are available, etc., that support this. RapidIO has a benefit in this application space in that it was really designed specifically for embedded, high-throughput, low-latency applications. So it has all the right key characteristics that we need. The other benefit is that it is broadly supported in silicon. So it is there's a wide choice of processors available that will have RapidIO endpoints in them. And also, having a small footprint, a small gate count to implement a RapidIO endpoint, it's quite easy to put that into an FPGA, and the major FPGA vendors support RapidIO quite well as well. So it provides a lot of flexibility from the point of view of building a system. As I say, though, if you want further details, go to the RTA website, and you can see the various companies involved in that and what the standard consists of. If we look at the benefits of this from our point of view and for this application space, then the first thing is the fact that it is a switch fabric. Many of the sort of legacy multiprocessing systems that we find ourselves replacing are based on a shared bus. Shared buses have, generally speaking, you get less bandwidth, you get latency concerns as processors queue up to get access to that shared bus. So the flexibility of a switch fabric, the fact that it's a high speed, 10 gigabits per second point to point, those have key benefits for us. As I said on the last slide, RapidIO was designed for embedded applications. Specifically, it's supported across a wide range of processors that allow you to really select the processing units that are most appropriate to your particular application. And the low gate count, on the FPGA endpoints is crucial, really. Having the ability to get lots of processors talking to each other well is obviously beneficial, but if you can't integrate well with the outside world, can't bridge to other standards or provide the protocol converters necessary to support proprietary or legacy hardware, then that can become a real problem to you. And as we've said before, latency needs to be measured end-to-end, sensor to actuator, not just within the processing box. So RapidIO had latency as a primary design end, and one of the things that helps it in achieving that is the fact that guaranteed packet delivery is implemented at the hardware level. So the software overhead in moving data around the system is fairly small, and as we said earlier, the software tends to swamp hardware when you start looking at latency, when you start measuring latency on these data movements. Another benefit of RapidIO that we found very useful in system-level design is the ability to prioritize traffic, and that allows us to put low-priority traffic flows for control, management, error logging, etc., over the same data paths as high-priority traffic without disrupting that high-priority traffic. So we can still achieve the deterministic latency that we require without having multiple data paths. You can put your data plane and user plane traffic, to use the comms terminology, you can put those over the same fabric without any real problems. If we look at why RapidIO and ATCA, then if you just look at what ATCA is, this is just a generic ATCA structure diagram. You see that a switch fabric is really at the core of ATCA. And RapidIO is one of several fabrics that the standard supports, but it is one that's appropriate for this class of applications. ATCA and the subsidiary AMC specifications provide a good level of modularity. It's scalable, anything from a couple of carrier cards up to a 14-slot system. So you can scale up to 48 AMCs within one shelf. You can mix and match your processor types, PowerQuicks, PowerPCs, FPGAs, DSPs. As long as your software support is in there, you can bundle these together within your one system. And particularly from the communication space, there is a fair amount of support for the DSP nodes and multiprocessor cards within those AMCs, so you can get a good processing density as well. There are three interfaces in there, as you can see. The fabric interface, which in this instance we're looking at as being serial RapidIO. The base interface, which is generally used for control and management type tasks, which is gigabit Ethernet. And then the IPMI, which provides you with shelf and system management capabilities and machine health monitoring type applications. So a number of different data paths there. If we look at how that applies to our particular application space, then, as I said, the fact that the switch fabric is at the heart of the standards is important to us because RapidIO is what's really driving the ability to achieve the latency that we're looking for here. The fact that it is a modular structure that allows you to scale as you wish across this number of processors and scale per processor. If you look at some of the larger systems, single board computers these days are typically more and more moving to multiprocessor designs. So having something that you can scale at a single processor rather than two or four can be very helpful. It is an established standard. There is broad support for it within the industry, and that helps in terms of product availability. And interoperability is good as well. Now, I do have to say that ATCA is not yet a plug-and-play standard, and any of you who've done system integration work using ATCA will probably know that all too well. Just at the base interface level, it is possible to have some issues with integrating cards from different manufacturers. The system management capabilities are very helpful. The fact that you can put machine health monitoring sort of features into there are obviously useful for industrial application type things. And ATCA being aimed at the telecom space really is aimed at highly reliable, highly available equipment. It's worth noting that if you look at it in other spaces such as this, you do need to think about your strategy for achieving reliability and availability. HotSwap may or may not be appropriate for your sort of application. The other thing, of course, is telecom is a very cost-sensitive market, so you do need to recognize that the cost metrics tend to be volume-driven. I guess that's true in any market, really. Okay, so now let's have a look at the results of that question that we asked you earlier. Just see if, there we go. All right. So it's a fairly even spread, really, between the major interconnects, which is interesting. PCI Express, 10 Gig E, and Rapid IO. I'm not surprised that it's an even spread if we look at standard applications in this space, but I am a little bit surprised when we look at low latency applications. And I guess the reason for that is recognizing that Ethernet requiring software for the upper levels of the protocol, if you do drop a packet, you can have quite a latency hit. And so if your latency determinism is a key issue to you, then that can be a problem. Okay, so if we move on to the actual solution for some of the applications that we've looked at, looking at the top end of this application space, which, as I say, is looking at nanometer accuracy, high throughput, high speed. So the semiconductor and microengineering type applications, then we found ourselves providing solutions in this space based on this Ensemble product line. This is a second generation ATCA platform, so it has serial rapid I/O on the backplane, 10 gigabits per second, data communication path between all the AMCs. The AMCs that are available there, a collection is shown. They support Intel processors, PowerQuicks, PowerPCs, FPGAs, DSPs, and so on. Combination of those within one system. As I've said, it's not quite plug and play, but obviously buying a collection of parts or buying a complete system from one vendor has a benefit there. So, you know, as a system integrator, we benefit from having a broad stock of board-level components that we can put our systems together with. Standard software is available at the lower levels, U-boot, Linux, drivers, etc. And we'll typically look at some customized software for the upper levels, hardware abstraction for the processing network, high availability for system management, and so on. This sort of stuff, if you need any more details or if that interests you, then just have a look at Mercury's website and you'll find full details of that. If we look at how we took that and applied it to a semiconductor application, then in this particular instance, the PowerQuick was selected as the processor. That allowed Linux to be used, which provides a strong development environment. Other processors, of course, could be used, and some of that is down to customer choice and the software, whether or not there's legacy software that needs to be used, and these sorts of issues. We used FPGA-based AMCs to support legacy I/O, so we were able to bridge between a proprietary interface and the rapid I/O to allow legacy equipment to be used outside the control platform. Gigabit Ethernet, the base interface within ATCA. GigE is obviously a well-supported standard, and for parts of the application where real-time performance is less critical, that's still a very useful interface for us. In this case, we use that as a way of bringing the system up and booting from a central control point and providing access to this all from one central server. So the non-time critical parts will work over gigabit Ethernet, but the critical data paths run over rapid I.O. And of course this is a scalable solution in that the number of AMCs used for both processing and I.O. Can vary, hence one platform can be used to support a wide range of product variants. If we look at how this maps onto the requirements that we described earlier in the presentation, then in terms of deterministic latency, we carried out some benchmarking exercises. The latency you achieved obviously depends on the network and some specific configurations. In this case, we did some analysis on the traffic flows, and we measured latency between processors and between processors and I.O. nodes with representative traffic flows. And we were looking at a couple of microseconds point to point, including software overhead. If you look at the switch performance, off the top of my head, I think you're looking at around 700 nanoseconds per hop. So maybe a third of that was down to hardware latency, and the rest of that was due to software latency. We've talked about the support for proprietary I.O. and how we achieved that using FPGA-based AMCs. The fact that the rapid I.O. footprint is quite small is a key issue there in allowing these bridges or protocol translators to be implemented quite readily on cost-effective hardware. We've got a platform here that is flexible. It's modular. You can move between either a star or dual star fabric or a mesh fabric depending on the bandwidth requirements and where the data flows within the system. So it's possible to scale your chassis to a certain extent according to the particular application as well. And the AMC granularity is a useful feature in scaling these systems. We end up with a platform that is cost-effective for the level of performance that it provides, and that performance is significantly higher than the bus-based solution that we've displaced in some of these applications. In terms of roadmap, this has a fairly straightforward technology path. ATCA supports larger systems. It has a, if you like, a cousin in micro-TCA, and the micro-TCA standard uses the same AMCs. So it's possible to take all the AMCs that were used in the ATCA application, move them to a smaller chassis, single shelf or dual shelf, and maintain basically the same architecture. So you'll see that the fabric route map may be different, but it's still the same fabric. You still have your base interface of gigabit Ethernet. You still have IPMI functionality. So it's a nice transition to a smaller package. It allows reuse of a lot of the hardware. And in micro-TCA, some of the fabric switching capability that would typically be provided on an AMC carrier is moved out to switch cards at either end of the chassis. One benefit of micro-TCA is the fact that the thermal performance is improved. You're looking at something that is one or two AMCs tall with airflow across just that limited number of AMCs. If you look at an ATCA chassis, you have airflow over a stack of four AMCs. So with the improved thermal performance of micro-TCA, it's easier in this space to support some of the later dual core processors and hence improve the processing density of these systems. As always, there are some issues in porting from one system to another, and really a lot of that is down to how much thought has gone into the hardware abstraction layers and the various layers of middleware before porting that application. Okay, so let's look at a quick summary of what we've been through. High-performance control applications require low and deterministic latency, and it's the determinism of that latency that is a key feature. As I said before, having a good mean latency is really not sufficient in this application space. It's important to be able to constrain the latency over a range of conditions that your equipment has to operate in. From the work that we've done, we consider that Rapid I/O is the most appropriate fabric, for these low latency embedded systems, and that is not much of a surprise given that it was Rapid I/O was designed specifically for high throughput, low latency, and embedded. Since the switch fabric is at the heart of ATCA and MicroTCA, we find these to be quite natural form factors for implementing Rapid I/O. It's not quite building systems out of Lego, but the support for the switch fabric within the standard, the fact that there are AMCs out there, not just from Mercury, but from a range of suppliers, AMCs that support the fabric and that can be used to build these systems, makes it a very natural way to build something based on off-the-shelf hardware to get applications up and running quickly without a lot of custom development behind them. So that provides a summary of our thinking on how Rapid I/O and ATCA play in this space. If you want more information or more technical details on this, then I'd point you to the Mercury website, mc.com. If you look on the front page of the website, up in the top right corner, there's a Contact Us button, and send in a request for the white paper on this subject, and we'll get that information back to you. So that's me finished, Joe, so I guess back over to you.
Okay, thanks, Ian. That was very informative. Learned a lot. We now move into the question and answer phase. Before we go into that, to let you know that at the very end of the presentation, we'll be showing a slide that shows you the archive. This ECAST will be archived and be up in a couple hours and be up for the remainder of the year, so you can always go back and look at it. We've got a lot of questions that have come in during Ian's talk, and previewing them, most of them are very good questions. I'm just going to kind of dive into them without a lot of priority one way or the other. Joining us for the Q&A session, in addition to Ian, is Tom Roberts, who's a product marketing manager for Mercury. He's in Chelmsford, Mass. He's been lurking in the background here during this, and he may chime in to answer some of the questions. So here's some couple of architectural questions. One, does Rapid I/O and the Rapid I/O switches support packet broadcasting? Can data from one sensor be sent to all the nodes simultaneously?
Yes, it does. The standard supports packet broadcasting, and I think that most of the switches that are out there now do. If you want more information on that, as I say, the RTA website will give you details. As well as supporting broadcast, the later switches will also support multicast, so you can send to just a subset of the endpoints rather than to all of them.
Okay, good. Here's a question related to MicroTCA architecture. Comment is, yes, we can reuse AMC cards, but do we need to rebuild the Rapid I/O switch on an AMC? If so, how does it fit? Where does the Rapid I/O switch go in a MicroTCA system?
It doesn't go onto an AMC. It goes into a switch module. The MicroTCA standard supports something that I don't know if they still refer to it. They used to refer to it as a virtual carrier.
It's now called it's not called the MCH, the Micro TCA Carrier Hub.
Right. And that would typically include, normally this is a sandwich of cards because it has enough functionality that it's hard to fit it all onto one module. But that will support the IPMI infrastructure, the base interface switching, and the fabric switching. So there are a couple of vendors out there at the moment that I'm aware of for rapid I/O switches that fit within the Micro TCA standard.
Yeah, basically what the MCH does in a Micro TCA is it replaces the logic that would normally go on an ATCA carrier card, all the switching logic, all the management control logic. Here's a question. Based on your presentation, Ian, why connect AMCs with 10 gig Ethernet, yet connect the main cards between cards with serial rapid I/O? Maybe you might need to explain the base interface a little bit.
Right. So the base interface in ATCA is built into the standard. To be compliant with ATCA standards, you have to support that base interface. And the base interface is actually 1 gig E, not 10 gig E. So it typically gets used, as I say, for less crucial, less time-critical data. And what you will generally do is put your system management or in communications systems, what they refer to as, I think it's user plane goes onto the base interface, and then the data plane stuff, the time-critical information, goes onto the fabric interface. So if you're looking at 10 gig E as a potential interface within ATCA, that would be an alternative to rapid I/O fitting into that fabric interface.
Here's sort of a related question. Since rapid I/O is a switched fabric, doesn't latency become non-deterministic if you have fabric contention?
Now, that, I have to say that when we first started using or proposing this technology for this application space, that was the assumed wisdom at the time. And some of our customers really didn't believe that we could get the sort of constrained latency that they required using rapid I/O. But benchmarking shows that it does work, that the prioritization is such that you can get constrained latency. And as I say, the sort of point-to-point latency that we were measuring was of the order of a couple of microseconds. And we tried doing that with contending low-latency traffic into the same endpoint. So if you send high-priority traffic into an endpoint and at the same time send contending low-priority traffic into that same endpoint, you see maybe a 10% impact on the latency. So it is very possible to build a system that meets these very tight latency constraints.
I guess here's a sort of related question. Does Rapid I/O have parameters that need to be configured to make a particular implementation good for low latency?
I wouldn't classify it as being parameters that need to be configured for Rapid I/O. Certainly you need to be careful how you set up your switch fabric network. And you would typically have, we would provide a middleware that allows people to do that. There are various tools available and system integrators are used to working with those features. But you don't have to tune the network per se to get low latency behavior.
It's inherent in Rapid I/O.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Here's a three-letter acronym question. What serial rapid I/O features help with SMP and HPC? I'm not sure I know what those are.
SMP is symmetric multiprocessing, and HPC is high-performance computing, but I don't know if that's what the question asker means in this case. Certainly, Rapid I/O standard has some SMP features built into the standard. But that's separate from the switch fabric capability. HPC, if that does mean high performance computing, then any high performance fabric helps with achieving a dense compute cluster.
Okay, I think that's probably as good an answer as we can come up with. Here's sort of a question related to Rapid I/O. If your Rapid I/O cores don't support 10 gig transfers, can you slow down either the entire chassis or just those links that operate at slower rates? Can you have different links running at different speeds?
Yes, you can. And that's one of the benefits of the standard, is that you can configure a system so that the speed of each individual link is what it needs to be for your system performance. So if you have, for some reason, you're using an FPGA that doesn't have a speed grade that will support full 10 gig, you want to use a cheaper FPGA on an endpoint, you can have just the link to that FPGA running slower than the rest of the system.
Okay. So the answer is yes, you can have different speed links operating the same over the backplane.
Yeah.
Here's a question about software. You mentioned Linux as part of the example solution. What version of Linux were you using or do you typically use in these real-time control apps?
Well, the example I was thinking of has gone through a number of Linux versions. For our benchmarking, we need to play some tricks to stop the operating system getting in the way during the crucial code sections. How we did that is somewhat outside the scope of this presentation, but I believe that there may be some more information on that within that white paper I referred to.
Okay. Here's another fabric question. Does RapidIO support RDMA?
RDMA being remote DMA?
Yes.
Now, on this one, I'm going to ask my friend Tom to interject. Assuming that Tom is there. Are you there, Tom?
I'm here. I'm here, Ian. So give me that question again.
Does RapidIO support remote DMA? Can you do transfers from one chunk of memory to the other chunk of memory in different boards without going through a central CPU?
Yeah, RapidIO is capable of that kind of remote DMA. You know, essentially writing from one. All the memory, you can set it up so that all the memory looks pretty much the same to any one endpoint. So writing to memory at another endpoint pretty much looks the same as writing to your own memory.
Okay. That summarizes a lot of the sort of detailed technical questions. There's a number of more general questions here, and I'd like to dive into those. We've got about 10 more minutes. Here's maybe a loaded question, but I'll ask it anyway. Will serial RapidIO ever meet the price points of PCI Express and 10 gig Ethernet? I think the presumption there is that it's more expensive.
Yes, I think that probably is a presumption. Certainly, when we look at cost comparisons, we try to make sure that we do a like-for-like comparison. And if you're looking for latency, then, as I've mentioned earlier, I think there are some concerns about using 10 gig E at the top end of the application space, where the latency cost of a software retry, if you get a dropped packet, can be high enough to kick you off, kick you outside of what's an acceptable boundary. Now, I'm sure that offload engines, etc., go some way towards mitigating that effect, but that is still a real problem. There are also some issues with PCI Express in this sort of application space. And again, it depends on where within the application space you sit. But RapidIO will support a peer-to-peer model. As Tom just said, DMA is supported where you can transfer data directly from any one node to any other node, provided you have DMA support at the source node. You don't have to go through a host. You don't have to look for arbitration from a host. My understanding is that PCI Express is more of a flat tree managed fabric where you need to operate through a host, and that you have the danger of hitting a bottleneck there that, again, will impact the latency. So I think on a like-for-like, you have to be careful that what you're comparing is two things that have the same capabilities, rather than simply saying, how many processors have I got? Are they all 10 gig fabrics? Not all 10 gig fabrics are the same.
That's correct. And PCI Express, of course, if you lose the root, you've lost the entire tree. I think probably another answer to this question is, at least in the DSP community, a lot of DSP manufacturers, their preferred interface is serial rapid I.O. And not PCI Express, and that's what you've got to work with. So,
yeah, and I think that comes down to the size of the endpoint. You know, the rapid I.O.
Right.
endpoint, as I say, has a relatively low one. A relatively low gate count, and that does make it a preferred interface, particularly for DSPs.
Right. This next question, Ian, you I think you sort of answered when your description of micro TCA, but the question is, isn't this sort of thing only aimed at very top-end applications, and how small will this scale? How small a system could you build using rapid I.O. and AMCs?
Well, we've built systems anything from the top-end 14 slots all the way down to, in micro TCA, just two AMCs. And it's quite possible to get off-the-shelf chassis that will support a two AMC configuration. You look at what you can fit onto one of those AMCs, you can put a dual-core power PC on there. We have an AMC that supports an FPGA and three DSPs. So you can put a fair amount of processing power plus an FPGA card to support all your proprietary I.O. And within a two AMC solution, you've got a very compact and very capable little controller.
Mm-hmm. And a fairly inexpensive one.
Yeah.
Here's a sort of good question. What, for these kind of applications, what kind of systems were you using before ATCA came along?
Most of the things that we find ourselves looking at, the legacy hardware is typically a mix of VME and proprietary. So a typical start might be to use something over the user-defined pins on a VME and use a VME chassis. So that sort of space is VME or VME-based, I guess, is where we find ourselves replacing that equipment.
Okay. Here's kind of a common question, and I think maybe it's comparing apples and oranges, and you've already answered this, but this question came in early. Isn't Ethernet more common in ATCA systems than serial rapid I.O.?
I think within the communication space it is.
Yep.
But again, it depends on the particular application niche. Certainly for DSP farms, I think rapid I.O. is more commonly used. And for what we would classify as real-time embedded applications, Ethernet is less common in those areas.
Sure, because Ethernet, at least in most packet processing applications, determinism and low latency is not necessarily the most important thing.
Yeah, and Ethernet has a natural home where the processing platform has a job function that is primarily communicating via Ethernet to other network applications.
Okay. Here's kind of a related question. It's Ethernet versus Rapid I.O. Why not use PCI Express?
Well, I think you mentioned one of the issues before. We talked about the fact that it's a flat tree, that you need to have a host, and that if you lose your communication route, if you lose access to that host, then that network goes down. So in the in some of the studies we've done, and in fact in some of the studies some of our customers have done, they have independently come to the conclusion that PCI Express is not appropriate for their application because of these reasons.
Yeah, and I think at least in the ATCA world, you see a lot of chip-to-chip interconnects on a board being PCI Express because that's what the processors support in a lot of the I.O. chips, but I'm not aware of any major deployments where PCI Express goes across the backplane. That's more the purview of Rapid I.O. and Ethernet.
Yeah, PCI Express, it within ATCA is, as you say, more commonly just between two neighboring AMCs. And a lot of carriers are laid out that way. I think some of our carriers actually support rapid I.O. onto the backplane, but if you want to pair two AMCs, then a simple PCI Express link between the two. And that broadens the scope of the various interfaces that you can support in terms of network processor or whatever.
Okay. Here's a question that just came in, and this is more of an architectural question than a rapid I.O. question. Does a full mesh ATCA chassis offer a particular advantage over a star or dual star, and can you do full meshes in micro TCA?
I'm not aware of a full mesh chassis in Micro TCA. I could see some difficulties with doing that in terms of the MCH having enough pins to do so.
Yeah, I mean, you've got lots of communications channels, but you may not have pins in the MCH. I think it would depend on the number of AMCs you had in the Micro TCA system.
Yes, I think it would. The main benefit in ATCA, it tends to get used more where you've got a reduced board count. I mean, you can do a large chassis with a full mesh, but that tends to get expensive. We find it used around the sort of five slot, full mesh between that. A lot of these applications don't require the bandwidth of a full mesh, but it's like anything else. If you're using only 10 or 20% of the bandwidth that's available at the system level, then you're much less likely to come up with any latency impact when you get sudden peaks of traffic flow on the network. So it has a benefit in that sense.
Okay. Well, sometimes things work out well. We're just about at the bottom of the hour, and we have one question left. And this is a question based on the survey results, which is, I think you pointed out that RapidIO and PCI Express and Ethernet sort of had similar acceptance levels, and InfiniBand was somewhat below that. And the question is, why was InfiniBand so low on the survey, and there was no discrimination between the other three? I've got an opinion on that, but I'll let you go first.
That's a good question. To be honest, I expected there to be more discrimination between the other three because Ethernet, I think most people view that as being on a par with RapidIO in terms of bandwidth-driven applications. PCI Express, as you say, is more point-to-point and is used more in that way. But why InfiniBand is lower, there seems to be a market perception that InfiniBand is maybe more for compute clusters than real-time embedded.
Mm-hmm. Or storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, my take on it would be that certainly the ecosystem to support InfiniBand is somewhat smaller than the other ones, and the other three, you know, PCI Express is a popular chip-to-chip interconnect within an ATCA board. Ethernet's popular on the backplane for packet processing applications, and RapidIO is popular when you've got big banks of DSPs. I think it's application-dependent.
Yes.
So I think it's the fabric wars are sorting themselves out. So, well, that really wraps up all the questions. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Tom. And thank you, audience, for sending those in. That was good. There was a lot of good questions there. We're at the bottom of the hour. We've taken an hour of your valuable time today. I want to remind everyone that the archive of this event will be available in a couple hours at the URL that you see on your screen, opensystemspublishing.com/ecast. Feel free to send us any comments to Open Systems Publishing about this ecast so we can make the event better in the future. If you have any questions about this event, we can get them directed towards Ian after the fact. And I want to thank all the audience for spending the time to listen to Ian's presentation. I particularly want to thank Ian for the work he put into it. It was very enlightening and very educational.
Thanks very much, Joe. It's been fun to do.
Okay. Hope to see all of you at the audience at a future Open Systems Publishing eCast. And with that, we'll wrap it up for today. Thank you.